You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Welcome to the Chris Spangle Show. My name is Chris Spangle, and this is a podcast about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, but lately it's been all about podcasting, and as you know, this feed is largely about whatever I want it to be about, and we're going to do politics eventually, I'm sure, but a lot of people have asked a lot of questions about how I've built We Are Libertarians and the growing empire. And so I've been recording those episodes and putting them into the feed. I was going to start podcasting and platforms.com and teach people how to do it. But, you know, there were some certain events that happened this year that kind of derailed me. And so I really had to focus on We Are Libertarians. And I just don't have the time to do that. But, you know, we've grown a really cool platform, and I want to teach people how to do that, and this seems the best avenue to do that. And one of those people who's asked me a lot of questions, I said, you know what, instead of me just explaining this to just you, why don't you come down, let's do a podcast, you can ask me all the questions, as your students did. Don Wetrick, how are you doing?
Hey, the student is the teacher. I'm the teacher has become the student today.
You have a radio voice.
Well, thank you, Chris. No, I'm let's just start off that I'm jealous.
Now, what's your podcast, first and foremost?
Yeah, Start It Up. Kind of an entrepreneurial look at education. The odd thing is I'm a teacher who has a serious issue with education,
mm-hmm.
and I'm frightened about where we're going with things and then the things that we're not doing to prepare our students. So traditionally, I interview a lot of entrepreneurs and strange people with opinions
right.
on education. And yeah, so that's what I do.
Now, the guests right before you are two of your students, Sarah and Courtney.
Yes.
And I am putting them out at the same time you're coming out, and you referred them. And you've got a lot of students that are podcasting, don't you?
I've got a lot of students that are just doing, Chris.
Cool.
And that's what makes me excited. I mean, sometimes they, well, I not that I'm going to pander to Gary the whole time, but, you know, I agree with Gary Vee that everybody's a media company. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're doing cool things and no one knows about it, it's the tree in the forest, right? So, yeah, we've got some students that are podcasting, some that are doing vlogs, good blogs, photography, things of that nature. But I think that they can all kind of mix in. And so, you know, as long as they're producing content, I'm happy. And the other thing I like about this, in some ways we're going to do this today, this the think out loud.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, sometimes they don't feel comfortable with pushing out. Like, I always make sure that they always have some sort of a, either they have a blog, a podcast, or a YouTube channel. And I do this for a couple reasons. One, if they can, like, reflect mm-hmm. on air, so to speak. Like, first of all, I'd give you like $50,000 if I could have video footage of myself at age 18. I'd like to watch it. Like,
right.
I'm like, oh my gosh, what was I thinking? Or, oh, that, there's where it started, kind of thing. So, if they can push out content, then we're all happy, and they can either look back on it and reflect, or if they push it out to the world, it's a little bit of social pressure for them to do more.
Right. Yeah, and I appreciate you. This is probably the first podcast you've done with a cat that you're paying.
I wasn't going to bring it up, but I'm loving it right now because Mittens, what's up, Mittens?
Now, you are libertarian-leaning,
yeah.
And that's why you're aware of my podcast?
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, I have been for a long time. I'm not sure if you remembered it. Years ago, I had... Well, I'm sorry. A lot of students, once you start having conversations out loud,
mm-hmm.
and it's like a politically free biased zone,
mm-hmm.
most of my students kind of like find this crazy thing that they have this thing like, you know what? Like, I just wish there was a political party that, and they describe usually libertarians.
Right.
So a long time ago, I met you because I went to a libertarian event with one of my students who was a super libertarian,
mm-hmm.
and that's where I met you. So I don't even know if you remember that. It's the origin story. This is like, we're talking 2000 and...
I don't...
2013.
Wow. Okay, so was it a Gary Johnson event?
No, you know what? No, it was before that. This may have been like 2011. No, it wasn't. It was... I forget. Somebody, it was a speaker,
okay.
and they came out, and we thought it'd be cool to go, and... Yeah, not overly active libertarian, just because I have to watch myself. You know, I do a lot of other things with schools.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there'll be schools where they'll leave. And like when I do stuff on the East Coast, you know, if they even get a hint of like, I smell some Republican on you,
yes.
then I don't get asked back. And if at the same time I go to Texas a lot and they're like, I smell liberal. Right. And so I can't.
Welcome to my struggle. I almost said my comp.
Right.
Yeah.
No, like, I mean, it's true. So, yeah.
Go on our Facebook page for We Are Libertarians. It's 87,000 people trying to determine what tribe you're in so they can either reject you or embrace you. I mean, and it is. It's a weird environment now where everybody's just so tribalist with politics. And I hate it because I'm a nonpartisan person. I want to be open to all different ideas. And I think it's great when you create an environment in your classroom where you can do that. And I think that's you're a communications teacher.
That's the interesting thing. So I used to be a broadcasting, documentary film, all these other things. And then we had this weird experiment called our innovation class. Mm-hmm. Origin story is I watched Daniel Pink's TED Talk and I thought, man, master autonomy purpose. Mm-hmm. Instead of people working for money, his point was they work for master autonomy purpose. And it's like, what if I did that in school? So instead of a grade, they pursued things they've always wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ended up growing this class and it's gone nuts. I mean, that's the reason why we get so many guests from the beginning is because the entrepreneurs had seen what we've done and they're like, I see what you're doing over there. And that's right. Freaking cool. So now I'm an innovation teacher, and we do.
That's cool.
Yeah. So a lot of it's self-directed, and a lot of it is, not always is it entrepreneurial, but I usually push for them to try to be.
So you have your Start ED podcast, Start mm-hmm. Ed Up.
Yep.
You've interviewed a lot of really cool people.
Yeah. I think this is probably the number one question I get. How'd you get that guy?
Right.
And I think without doubt is because I'm a teacher
mm-hmm.
and there's some sympathy.
Right.
Right. And
you're poor. You're
right. 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 And I've
downtrodden.
And I've ran with that because, well, okay. So again, the whole breakthrough of the class was Dan Pink endorsed what we did. So I knew I could count on Dan. But the other part of this is like students and I would reach out to people because I have an entire week. I say entire, like it's a long time, but I have an entire week dedicated in class to social media and branding.
Okay.
And so I'm like, get your profile right. Get LinkedIn right. Don't do stupid things on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Don't do stupid things on Instagram, even on Snapchat. Don't do stupid things. And so we reach out to people so we can Skype call them.
Mm-hmm.
We started getting some really cool people, like really cool. And so one day we had this 2-hour conversation with Tim Ferriss. And then one of my students was like, did you record that? I was like, yeah, I did. Actually, I put it on Facebook Live, I believe. And they said, why don't you like put it out? And like, yeah, why don't I?
Yeah.
And we had access to really interesting people. And so one day I pressed record and then start going from there.
So was it a function of they Facebook Live in to Skype and it's your students having a conversation with Tim Ferriss? Is that the idea?
Well, that was the original. Well, that was the first way we did it. But then a lot of times these people who I was flattered, they talk to me. They're like, I'm available from this time to this time. I don't like, that's it.
Right.
So if I didn't have students, like there was no podcast. So they're like, mm-hmm. are you going to talk to me or not? And then partly this was Tom Bilyeu's thing. So Tom has had a show called Inside Quest and now has a thing called Impact Theory. And he had a podcast for his employees. And because he, you know, interviewed these great minds and he wanted to pass that on to his employees. And so they weren't available live. So he put it out for them, supposedly. So that kind of was the same mantra that I was going to interview really cool people about education. And then, quite frankly, give my kids a Rolodex.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, I just talked to this guy at YouTube. He's one of the head guys. Hey, kids that said you want to be a YouTuber. There you go.
Right.
So only two of my podcasts have been with students in the room at the same time. And one of them, they deliberately asked that. That was Jocko Willink. And he's like, I really, really prefer it if it was your students also asking them questions. But other than that, a lot of times it's, you know, it's 7 p.m. Eastern or Pacific time. So I'm doing it at night. Kind of.
Gotcha. So give us the roster. Give us the impressive roster. Name drop a little bit.
Name drop. Well, I guess I could start with Ferriss, but I never put that one out. Like, I still mm-hmm. have that, and he said I could use it, but I'm kind of hoping, Tim, you're listening, I'm kind of hoping he'll do another one, because the audio, well, I wasn't set up for audio that day.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say Tim is not listening.
Well, never
I'm
know.
Sure he...
You never know.
We have around 700-800 listeners to this show, but Tim's not one of them, I would
but
guess.
But somebody is a friend of a friend of a friend.
Right.
Let's see. Dan Pink, Gary V, James Altucher, Jocko, like I mentioned before. One of my favorites was Jeff Hoffman, who helped co-found Priceline.com. John Acuff is on this week. I don't know.
You got on, obviously we've been friends, but as a podcaster, you got on my radar when I open up Facebook one day and like, there you're in James Altucher's
studio.
Office. And then yeah. You went to New York and like you did this tour of Altucher and
Gary
V.
John Fort. There's a guy. There's a guy. Oh, I really like John. Fort Knox podcast. So yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. It's been dumb luck in some ways, but yeah, I remember we. That's when I started asking you some questions too, because I had already been following We Are Libertarians, and we can weigh on that here in a second. But like, I've been noticing your growth and noticing the things you guys are doing right, and I'm forever a student, and I'm trying to figure out things. So yeah, those are some names. I know I'm missing out, and I'm forgetting like some really cool people, but. And it's funny because some of the people that aren't well known have been my favorites.
Yeah.
Some people that are like, oh my gosh, what you just said was amazing. John Ushai, you know, he's like head of creator content at YouTube, 24-year-old kid who's just cooler than cool. It's those episodes I really like too. And quite frankly, and I'm not going to name names on this one, but sometimes the celebrities, aren't as...
They're phoning it in.
Right. Or they're looking at their watch. So
at my day job, the some of the best comedians are the guys who have done comedy for 20 years but aren't celebrities.
Yeah.
And so they know how to put together an appearance.
Yeah.
And they don't have much to lose. You know, they're still hungry because they've done it for 10, 15, 20 years. And then there's the guys who are just pros, like Jeff Foxworthy, Larry the Cable Guy, who get what they're supposed to do. They call in and they kill it. But then there's like the guys who kind of aren't familiar with the fact that every time you call into this particular program, you're speaking to 300,000 people. I mean, you're speaking to a Lucas Oil Stadium plus right. Bankers Life Fieldhouse. Like, don't just, you know, and it's just another one of these phone calls. And it's like you talk and you watch it on the late night circuit. You get one of these actors or actresses on, and they're just like so uninteresting because it's not important to them. They don't. Yeah. They're being forced to do it by the studio. So yeah. I mean, a lot of times it's those people who have experience, who have done it for a while, who are still a little hungry, that always make the best guests. In every venue, every avenue I've ever worked in over the last 15 years. I mean, it's and so. You want those big names because those big names really do bring people in. I mean, out of the 1.5 million downloads that we have, 113,000 of those are Ron Paul, you know, and Ron Paul's interview, our 10-minute interview was not that interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Ron Paul said what Ron Paul says, that you could get anywhere else if you listen to Ron Paul. But, you know, having Noam Chomsky in 2013, we interviewed Noam Chomsky and Mark Thornton and Ron Paul and Jeffrey Tucker, Tom Woods, Gary Johnson, like these names helped lend credibility to our RSS feed at a time that we needed to establish credibility. And because you always have to, this is a confidence game.
Yeah.
You have to have, people have to have confidence that you are worth their time, because if you're going to ask people to spend 5 hours a week listening to you, they have to know that you are worth their time. And so I've been very transparent now. I don't do a lot of interviews because I just think everybody does a lot of interviews. And I'd like to start doing some with people that aren't, you know, just your typical libertarian names that you hear a lot of.
Right.
But I do, you know, we have built a certain, it's like friends sitting around a table talking about politics, and that's kind of become the banner. So to start doing interviews kind of breaks what has made us popular. So how do you then show that social proof? And social proof is a concept of it's not you talking about yourself that makes people impressed with you. It's when other people are talking about you that they trust, and that's what social proof is. So when Don Wetrick posts a picture of him interviewing James Altucher, somebody that I respect, I go, oh, his podcast is serious. You know, and for me, Social Proof, the reason that I'm very transparent about our numbers, when a lot of podcasters don't put out their numbers, they don't say, here's the growth of our audience, or here's the decline in our audience, here's how many downloads, because like we average between 6,500 and 7,000 downloads an episode.
Wow.
Which, oh, 7,000 people? That's not a lot, but you heard Don just go, wow.
Yeah.
Because that's a monster audience. That's
absolutely.
That puts us in the top 1% of all podcasts. And yes. So when I put that number out, I rely on the fact that a Doug Carr or a Don Wetrick is going to write, holy crap, that's huge.
Yeah.
My peers are going to go, oh, wow, that's a big audience. And they're going to start talking about me to their audience. They'll start taking me seriously. And then when a Jeffrey Tucker takes a libertarian entity seriously, then their audiences will take you seriously. And so that's part of the reason that I do put out our growth and our numbers and our Patreon. And
no, and that's exactly why I wanted to come here and meet with you, because, and I'm also transparent about mine too.
Yeah.
And I've actually got the opposite problem.
Mm-hmm.
Me having Gary on my show meant nothing to my educational audience.
Right.
Matter of fact, it's one of the reasons why I had it. Like the day we interviewed Tim, mm-hmm. I put out an email, and I love where I work, by the way,
mm-hmm.
but I said, hey, we're going to interview Tim Ferriss. How many teachers in a building of 90 teachers, how many people knew who Tim Ferriss was? Like two.
Two, yeah.
And I was like, well, there's your problem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, if you don't know who Peter Diamandis is, I don't want to talk to you, kind of thing, you know?
Right.
And I don't know if you know who that is.
Yeah.
But, like,
yeah.
These are people I really look up to. And that was the reason why we chose to go the author entrepreneurial route. So our base is weird. So me and my Social Proof, I'm like, I'm posing with Gary, and that's all of a sudden when I almost made the shift from going to an educational podcast to an entrepreneurial podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm not like, you know, we're going to focus today on 10X growth, and we're going to talk mm-hmm. about, you know, hustle and grind.
Yeah, there's a podcast called The Millionaire Blog something, and like this dude is just so nakedly, like, he's just like a huckster, but I learned a ton from his podcast, but he's like, I made $10 million with my blog, and you can too, and 5 easy steps to blah, blah, blah. And you learn a lot from it, but there's this whole segment of people who are trying to be John Lee Dumas.
Yes.
And I think they're all just marketing to each other, and it just becomes kind of incestuous, and it's like the comedy community. Like, I tell comedians, because comedians contact me all the time and say, hey, how do you do podcasting? And I say, first and foremost, don't do a comedy podcast about comedy.
Yeah.
Don't do a comedy podcast or do a podcast about politics from a comedian's perspective.
Yeah.
Or parenting from a comedian's perspective, because it's math. So it's like the first thing that I learned freshman year, first class, was journalism. Mrs. Burris taught me that you have to have your content be relatable. That's why journalists always try, and local media outlets, to relate to a local person.
Yeah.
And if you're doing a comedy podcast about the art of comedy, that's a very small percentage of the population. But if you're a teacher who's funny doing a podcast for teachers, there's a lot of population out there. And so I'm not surprised that as you shift more from the entrepreneurial sector, which is very saturated with a lot of great content, to interviewing teachers about their experiences, their unique tactics, that you're going to see a lot of growth, because you're getting a lot of teachers going, oh, I can relate to this, I can use this, I get something of value out of this.
Yeah.
That's why We Are Libertarians has grown, because most, and this is why I set it up with two basic principles. I want to do a libertarian podcast. Okay, what is everybody doing? They're interviewing famous libertarians to talk about libertarian philosophy for a libertarian audience. All right, well, that's good, and you can become significant in the libertarian circle, but what percentage of the population are in the libertarian movement?
Mm-hmm.
It's very small. It's 1% of the population. Okay, well, how do I get a larger piece of the pie? Okay, set up the show so it's funny and relatable, with a cast of characters, with a format like Howard Stern or Bob and Tom, where people can relate to that conversational tone, and secondly, help people sound smarter when they're talking to their friends.
Yeah.
Give them...
Yeah, sharpen their brain, too.
Give them libertarian principles applied to current events.
Yep.
because even a Democrat or a Republican will go, I want to hear what a libertarian thinks about this subject.
Yeah, without ruining it for all of us.
Right. So you rarely hear us talk about Mises or Rothbard or what inner circle spat there is. We talk about net neutrality. We talk about Supreme Court decisions. We talk about politics because that's what people are interested in and have questions about. I woke up to 3 text messages from friends going, what should I think about net neutrality? I don't know. I know you're my smart friend about politics. Tell me what you think. And so I just took that principle and applied it to my podcast, and that's what's led to a lot of the growth.
Yeah.
So I think as you kind of start giving your audience something of value, because audiences are extremely selfish. They only care about you as long as they're spending time with you getting something out of it.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see a tremendous amount of growth.
I'm glad you said that. I mean, as kind of the aha moment I had, because teachers were listening at first, and I think that they still were, but like the biggest one day spike I had, other than Gary, was I made the announcement that in 2018 I was going to interview teachers.
Hmm.
And I was shocked, like literally. And one of the reasons why I didn't do it at the beginning is because, like, again, people didn't know who Naveen Jain was, to Tim Ferriss, people like this, to Tom Bilyeu. I forgot to say Tom Bilyeu. But like, I wanted the educational audience to know who they were first. And I kind of had this in mind, but all of a sudden I started getting emails from people like, hey, you say that not enough teachers don't do this, and most don't, but I do, and here's what I'm doing in my classroom. And I was like, holy shit. Like, yes, that's cool. The only thing is, they're in Sheboygan, or they're in rural North Dakota, and they're really killing it, but the only people that know anything about their classroom are moms and dads and aunts and uncles.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was like, oh my gosh. I do want to put a showcase on you. And then, like you said, I mean, now those, of course they're selfish with it. They're going to be the star of that show. So I'm hoping I will see some exponential growth. And yeah, the 7,000 an episode, that's just right now unimaginable. I'm lucky to squeeze out 1,000.
Yeah.
But you know, baby steps.
Yeah. That's such a huge part of it is it's, you know, we started out in Rupert's gubernatorial headquarters in 2012 and then moved to my apartment, and it was just cheap mics and a cheap board and do a cheap recorder. And then over time it's grown because it's like you said earlier, just start it.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Yeah.
And you'll learn along the way.
Yes. Oh my gosh. The guest, his name eludes me. I was interviewing some as an author. It was like last night. The episode's not up yet, but the craziest of simple quotes. He's telling his dad on this book he was gonna write, and he said, son, there's only one shortcut I know in life, and that is to start right now. And he's like, yeah, okay, I'm gonna write this book. He's like, no, seriously, get out your tablet, jot it down. What outline do you have? What is it gonna be about? Do you think you have chapters in mind? Like, start it right now. And that was exactly when that student said, did you record that on the thing we did on Facebook Live with Tim? I was like, I'm going to start this like tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I started calling out for guests and tweeting and sending emails and doing whatever I could. And so I like that approach. Just start it now.
Yeah. I'm writing right now before you got here and after you leave. I'm writing this. So I have a problem. A lot of our audience is new and we're adding 1,000 people a month. And so
God, that's awesome.
They don't quite know who we are, and people are, like I said earlier, people are trying to figure out what tribe you're in. And so, okay, so I have a problem. People don't give you the time to learn what you actually believe, to figure out what tribe you're in. So how do you solve that problem to help retain more people? Because you have to be quick in showing people your cards, because they're not going to give you 4 months to listen to your podcast to get all of those principles.
Give you 3 minutes of that first episode.
So write a statement saying, here's what we're about. Here's who we are. Put it up on the Facebook page. Put it up on the website and make it very clear, because not only does it help you define what you believe, what the principles of your show are, but it also helps define it for people to bring them up to speed really quickly. And so I was like, you know, I don't know. I should take some time before I post this and think about it and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you know what? This is going to be an evolving document, just as like the intro to the We Are Libertarians show sitting in front of me. Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host. We bring you all the reverence modern politics deserves. That has morphed and changed so many, weekly.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the intro and what I want people to do. Here's who we are. here's who I am, here's what I want you to do, heads up, you know, please be warned this show is raw, unedited, and authentic, so the language can be strong. That is a problem that listeners let me know about. Hey, I like your show, but I didn't expect there to be curse words.
Yeah.
And so, okay, heads up, there's going to be some language here.
Yeah.
You know, in this show, we'll bring you X, Y, and Z. Well, that was a listener saying, you know, I really kind of just want right at the beginning to know what you're going to talk about so I can fast forward. So as you just start, your audience will bring up problems that mm-hmm. you then solve, but you're never going to like know those problems until you start doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's I think you just have to start and then be open to getting that feedback and then start solving those problems.
That's exactly how we run our class right there. I mean, like, don't tell me about this thing you're going to start. Start it. And what is that Reid Hoffman quote? You know, if when he looks back at his first attempt at something, he's not embarrassed by it. He waited too long.
Right.
I love that mentality. And then getting that feedback. Matter of fact, I don't know if you watch Louder with Crowder. I think that he's trying to expand his audience because now he has this segment called Change My Mind.
I have not watched a lot, but I did watch the Two Genders episode of that.
Yeah.
That's the first piece of Crowder I've ever taken in.
Yeah, I have enjoyed watching his ascent to YouTube stardom of sorts. And it's, you know, he started off, you know, kind of as a comedian with mm-hmm. a right-wing slant, and then that just became everything. And I think now that he's doing that Change My Mind, he's trying to bring on more centrists or libertarians as well.
He is actually the impetus for that thought that I had earlier. He was a comedian who had sympathies, who saw a market that didn't have comedy.
Absolutely.
And started to fill that need. And you see Owen Benjamin kind of starting to go that direction too.
Mm-hmm.
And if you become the movement's comedian.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I'm a comedian who does conservative. Well, if you're a comedian who does conservative content, you're out of luck.
Yeah.
Unless you market to that movement to show up to your,
absolutely.
You know, like if you're Jeff Vibert, a friend of mine, you were a comedian who couldn't get a headlining gig. But then once you're Barstool Heartland's Jeff Vibert,
mm-hmm.
then you're using the same material to sell out clubs.
Yeah.
You know, and it's because you built a community outside of what you were doing, you're marketing to those people, you're giving them X value, and then you use that skill that you have to bonus the audience. And so that's a huge feature of like our shows, that we're funny. We try to be anyways, like, but we're not comedians doing politics. We're political analysts
who
don't take themselves seriously.
Yeah.
And that's a big difference.
Well, I think what I love about what you guys do is you show a level of vulnerability, but also thoughtfulness.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, here's the knee-jerk reaction that everybody else is going with. Yeah, let's break that down just a little bit.
Right. Like, net neutrality is a great example
of
that.
Oh, my gosh.
The internet is going back to 2015. Like, the internet still will exist.
Yeah.
And the reality is that Comcast has seen the marketplace reaction to if they tiered the internet and started partnering it out. Secondly, Norwood, Netflix, YouTube, Google, all these companies, they're not going to partner with the people that they're releasing statements vilifying on. Like, they're saying, we would never partner with these companies to do this. So this is a mood issue. Like, the scare tactic that net neutrality people are using is
it's been laughable.
Right. It's there's so much propaganda, and that's really what my show is about, is getting rid of the propaganda around an issue and finding what the reality is.
Yeah. Well, and even when it's uncomfortable, like, well, I sent a tweet back today. Somebody had a, you know, Netflix is going to be this much and this is going to be that much. And I said, what's your timetable on that?
Right.
Would you be willing to make a wager?
Right.
You know, if Netflix is going to be $55 because of bandwidth, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, is this going to be in a week, a year, 3 months? You want to make a wager?
Mm-hmm.
And the reaction was, well, but still. Okay. Nice point.
Yeah.
No, I like some of the things that you were weighing in on, the guilty until proven innocent time we're in with the Me Too.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think there's some assholes out there that have sexually harassed women? Oh, my gosh, yes.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And there isn't a man walking around that can't look back on a situation and go,
yeah,
I could have handled that a lot, especially in your younger days.
Yeah.
When you know, it wasn't until 32 that I really had a friend sit down with me and, like, explain to me how to treat women with respect. Yeah. You know, I mean, I respected women, but not in the way that women wanted to be respected. Yeah. And that's a huge difference. Like, when you're in your 20s, you think women want to be respected a certain way,
mm-hmm.
but women don't have the, they're too polite to say, hey, you're being an asshole in reality, and yeah. you need that one female friend to go, hey, jerk.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, I just, but there's also a power shift where you, this is good. The Me Too movement is yep. good, but yep. one of the unforeseen consequences is that women may lose opportunities because men are now afraid of women. Because the power balance isn't equal. It is now women have the ability to get you fired, so you better treat them differently.
Without any recourse or anything.
Right.
Yeah, I know. So that's scaring me.
So the power shifted from males having power and abusing it to women hopefully will not abuse the power that they've been given now, but it's certainly not equal, and you're going to see backlashes along those lines. And it's, but and, these are the things yeah. that you've got to strip out the emotion and the propaganda and start thinking about and having the courage to say,
could we pause for a second?
Let's and think see about if, this.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. So. No, I've watching this unfold has been, in some ways, it's funny because I know some people have been pointing this out, but some of these people that have been accused is, you know, you live by the identity politic, you die by the identity mm-hmm. politic, and then there's people have been waiting for their, you know, day of retribution. It's been here for some, but I just like it when you've pointed out, like, could we just pause and give this some like thorough looking into instead mm-hmm. of just, you know, broad, you know, paintbrush of everybody's guilty. But again, it's not to say that this hasn't been a long time coming. It has. But I'm afraid. Well, ultimately, what I'm really afraid of is that there's such a backlash or there's such a, well, now that we can't trust women from, you know, flirting with us,
mm-hmm.
We'll just not hire women.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we're not going to talk to them or give them a chance for advancement because, and I hope that pendulum swing doesn't go that far away. Although, again, the fear now of mistreating women is on people's mind, mm-hmm. which is a good thing. Just like you, I hope it doesn't go.
Every man needs to examine their own beliefs, just as every woman needs to examine their beliefs, because women, you know, like I've long talked about male vulnerability mm-hmm. and how women a lot of times don't let men show insecurities. And how that's a real problem. I didn't realize that was a thing until I heard Brené Brown talk about it. And I think, yeah. You know, she's certainly somebody who should be listened to on vulnerability and shame. I mean, so yeah, I don't want this to devolve into politics. But so what are some of the problems that you're having in your podcast that you need to solve?
identity. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said before, like, am I an educational podcast that features entrepreneurs? Am I an entrepreneurial podcast that features an educational slant?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer to that both is yes. So I think by blending, you were kind of alluding to this earlier, I'm now blending the two, and I have like a Monday, Wednesday, Friday lineup. Monday is just that 5-minute, you know, me off the top of my head, here's the thought for the week. The Wednesday is the entrepreneur, author, pseudo celebrity, mm-hmm. and the Friday is going to be a teacher. Cool. And I'm trying to blend those two worlds, and I think that's
Mittens is done being petted. Apparently,
well,
she's
I don't she may not like my lineup.
She's
like, no, don't have educators on Friday.
Sorry about that.
hey,
just get out of here. This is what this is for. This back scratcher is not to scratch my back. It's to move my cats off the table because they're.
But how many podcasts have a cat guest host?
Not so, enough.
There you go.
Dave Jackson, I think.
But so, no, I think that this kind of format, I'm hoping that has been my biggest identity crisis, is that I'm not necessarily exactly for one audience. So I'm trying to blend two. And then secondly, is just me figuring things out. Like I've talked to some people and they're like, well, tell me how you're growing your email list. Well, I haven't. And they're like, you're stupid.
That I agree. And I don't have an email list. I have like 200 people on it. And I wish that I had. And I apologize. My nose is stuffed up. You can hear it. But I wish I had set up the email catcher at the very beginning, mm-hmm. And that's something that I'm going to do better in 2018. But, you know, 6 years in, I'm going to be better about that. The best time to start was 2012.
Yeah.
The second best time to start is now.
Yep.
I to the identity issue, I would take yourself out of it because you're asking yourself about what your view. And I had this for a long time, and it didn't really catch on until 2018, but especially once I set up my Patreon and started forcing myself to have interactions with a lot of my audience, my core fans. Like, I forever took the Steve Jobs approach. I know what makes a good show. I know what makes good political analysis. I will tell you what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And that led me to do some things like this year, especially over the last few months, where focusing on the comedy aspect, on the joking aspect, and we shed audience, because what the audience really wants is the hardcore analysis. They want the politics.
Yeah.
They don't want the characters, because you can have some of that and you can be funny, but they don't want you to be, they don't want an hour of fluff and an hour of analysis. They want 10 minutes of fluff throughout the 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And that's not something that I got until 5.5 years into my own show, because of my own stubbornness, because I was looking at it how I wanted to do the show, how I wanted to look at it. But once I started like looking at my audience, and how do you do that? First and foremost, I have a PodTrack survey up on my website. I ask people to take it. I've had about 80 people take it.
That's genius.
Gives you a good idea. You read the reviews in iTunes, and you set up a Facebook group around your podcast, and you're going to start with 20 people, and eventually it grows into 1,300 people, and then it becomes like a good convert. They're not going to say something in the thing, but you're going to get the super fans of your show mm-hmm. that you can then privately message and say, hey, what do you think about this? And we now have a Discord chat, which is a gamer messaging platform.
I'm all about that.
Yeah, and so gamers love Discord, and now those people are not, because they're all INTJs. They're not afraid to tell you what they like and don't like, because they don't have any social skills. But you start to identify, you know, those 24 people, that 2% of your audience that has the courage to tell you what they really think.
Yeah.
You know, Samantha Wotes is somebody that for 5 years has told me what she likes and doesn't like. She's been somebody who says, hey, I want more shows. You're not being consistent. Because we weren't consistent. We were 2 a month, 3 a month, forever. Yeah. And then once we got consistent and people could rely on the fact that we were going to have a Thursday night show airing Thursday, released Friday, they knew it. That was a huge part of our growth. Building a website with some content as a home base was a huge part of our growth. The Facebook group was a huge part of our growth. The Patreon was a huge part of our growth. Adding a second show. Like, you always have all these little steps that add more people, and then they, because they're fans, start interacting with you, and then you can start asking them, like, what do you want? But as far as the identity goes, I would just say you need to identify who your target audience is.
Yeah.
Like, my target audience is a Gary Johnson voter.
Mm-hmm.
Our audience is probably more like Reason and National Review type folks than...
Oh my gosh, why didn't I mention I interviewed Nick Gillespie on your show?
Oh, really?
That was just stupid. Yeah. I didn't mention that.
So
sorry.
So, like, it's... Okay, what are the similarities between the kind of content I'm doing and other major media outlets? Then what do their audiences look like? So and a Facebook page is huge, because you can go into the business end of the Facebook page and look at your audience. Well, the We Are Libertarians audience is highly educated.
Yep.
They're between 25 and 54. They're about 70% male. They have graduate degrees. They're all college educated for the most part. They have higher incomes. They're white. They're married. They have kids. Okay, so then you can kind of build an avatar that you're designing stuff around. And so what I've always done is I've picked a single person in the Libertarian Party that I was trying to craft programs to. Or at my current job, what is the caricature of the person that I'm trying to program content to? At We Are Libertarians, what is the average makeup of the people that I'm like? And really what it comes down to is my audience looks like me.
Mm-hmm.
Middle class. Upwardly mobile, cares about issues in politics. What would I like? So yeah, you do have some of that, but so I'm really, what kind of media do I consume? What interests me? And I would rather read The Hill than LouRockwell.com.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would rather watch Politico than Alex Jones,
mm-hmm.
or I would rather read Reason than read Mises.
Right.
You know, and so. Because they're covering current events and current politics. So go all in on that, because that's what interests you. And as I have done that over the last 2 months, I'm seeing my average go from 4,500 to 5,000 up to 6,500 to 7,000.
Yeah.
Because I'm now giving them the red meat that they want. And so
that's really good.
So instead of focusing on what I thought was what people wanted, which was the comedy part, I started taking a look at what do they really want.
Yeah.
And I've been rewarded by that. And, you know, my Patreon, started out, I mean, it's at 1,100 with 94 people, and it was overnight. We got 500 people, literally overnight, $500 in Patreon subscriptions. And it's because we're giving people a product that they want. And you're never going to have success if you're focusing on what you think the audience wants. You have to start focusing on what they want.
Yeah.
And so you have to have kind of a good idea of who they are.
So are you getting more feedback from the Facebook group or what? Now I feel bad. Thank you.
I'm joking. Don't feel bad.
These are some of the things I haven't yet considered. And I'm like, dang. Now we do have a Facebook group. I'm not as active as I should be. Ironically enough, my Facebook personal is usually very supportive. Mm-hmm. I've got a large Twitter following, but Twitter's always spray and pray.
Yeah.
That when you're telling me like get more feedback, I'm like, oh my gosh, you're right. So are you throwing out incentives for them to give back their opinions, or are you just like literally reaching out like who's listening and then you DM them or something?
Yeah, so like right here at the opening of every show, this show is crowdsourced, so you can send us news with the hashtag WAL News. We're in our Facebook or Discord channel. We're always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@welibertarians.com. So I'm giving you hashtag, which is super easy to do, which is low barrier to entry, Facebook group or Discord channel, which requires you to do two clicks, or email, which takes even more time, but is more in depth. So I'm giving you 1, 2, 3, 4 ways to contact me and encouraging you, giving the audience permission to contact me, because people don't want to bother you. And they don't want to take that time without that permission to contact you. And so that's why I say this, and I say it throughout, and I constantly promote those avenues and say to people, I want you to follow me. I have on the front page of the We Are Libertarians website my personal Facebook, my personal Twitter, my personal email. Like, I want people to contact and interact with me because most of that interaction happens on my Facebook Messenger, because I am more active on my Facebook page and it's connected to the group. But that's really where most of the interaction happens. And so, like, if we were to sit down at the very beginning and put together, a ghost audience for you, I know advertising has like a specific term for this and I forget it, but it's basic marketing. Like, you have to have an idea of who you're marketing to, so then you can design your messaging. And so if you and I were to sit down and you were hiring me to build a podcast for you, which I'm not opposed to people paying me to do if you're out there, I would say, all right, your core audience really is going to be teachers. So what does your average teacher look like? Probably middle class, white, mostly female. So you want your content, like, you don't want, these broads are so hot. You want to emphasize more softer content that is more emotionally engaging, more vulnerable.
It's funny you say that. Let me have you weigh on this then.
So let me finish this train of thought here. So more emotionally vulnerable. Well, what's a good way to do that? Have people tell their stories.
Yeah.
And so you find teachers that have overcome some adversity to tell their story, and also techniques, not a technical show. If you were male oriented, I would say have people on from educational think tanks to give you the 10 steps to here's the technical thing to this. But I think women and everyone, story is how the human brain, that's the software that learns things. But women especially gravitate towards story and vulnerability. And so start crafting your content with that in mind. And the way to do that is talk to individual teachers who have figured some stuff out, have them tell their stories, and then your teachers are going to go, man, I feel that same thing in my day-to-day job. That answers a problem that I had. And so that's who I would say your target audience should be.
Yeah. So let me have you weigh in on this. So after, actually both Seth Godin and Gary have said this to me. Gary was a lot more blunt. So after the show was over, in a very Gary way, he's like, why the F are you trying to F and change teachers and education? I'm like, well, because we have to. We need to.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, let me ask you a question. He says, how many people come up to you after, like, I do a fair amount of keynote speaking, right? Mm-hmm. And he says, how many people come up to you and say, I wish my son had your class? I'm like, oh, that's almost exclusively what I hear. Like, whenever I go, people are like, oh, if you only would have had my son 5 years ago, mm-hmm. or I wish my son or that student. And I said, yeah, I'm here. And like, yeah. He says, then why aren't you going after the parents?
Hmm.
He's like, educate. And this is not me talking. This is Gary. He says, but education doesn't change that fast. Parents do. He says, while education takes its sweet time the next 5 to 10 years to pivot, a parent will say, no, I need this right now.
Right.
So that's one of the things that we've shifted, because like my company, the things that we put out content, not podcast wise for, and this is going to have you weighing on this, is like now like my online course is darn near for almost homeschool parents,
mm-hmm.
like hoping their kid can be more innovative and entrepreneurial. But I've not really tended to my, because now that I hear myself thinking out loud, and especially after some of the things that you'd recommended, maybe I should be a little bit more, hey, parents, have your kid listen to James. He knows what he's talking about.
Right.
Or, you know, I just a couple days ago, I featured two of my students. One of my students has made, I don't even want to talk about how much his money he's made on Bitcoin.
Right.
Well, but he was also one of those weird, I should say weird kid, but he's one of those kids that in middle school bought it.
Mm-hmm.
So he sat on Bitcoin for the last 3.5 years. So you can do the math on
that. Yeah, yeah.
But like, you know, getting more parents to say, you might want to pay attention to this. Thoughts mm-hmm. on me trying to market parents?
Yeah, I think, and I don't think there's any problem with having, like, for instance, I have, what I have noticed is that an RSS feed is a channel, and people tune into that channel for a very specific, singular reason. And if I put anything into the RSS feed for We Are Libertarians that is not an episode, that is not hardcore politics, I lose people, and I get lower downloads for that episode because it's a violation of what they want. And that's why this feed exists, because I have an existing audience that will listen to my hodgepodge of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I wanted the Chris Spangle Show to grow, I would have to choose a strategy and execute it. So I think marketing to teachers to improve their job performance, or parents who want to change education, are two very different things. And I don't think that
I'm not saying that parents who want to change education. Parents would just want the best for their kid.
Their kid. So,
you know, like, hey, what can my son learn from Seth Godin?
Right.
Kind of thing.
So I think that is, and students and parents have different goals too. So you've got to, so you could do two different shows, you know, and craft the content in a different way even. Like, you could take a Seth Godin interview, and you could do different intros, but use the same interview in three different channels even.
Oh, yeah.
Because with three different strategies, because the intro is really kind of what defines, it's the paradigm that they will view that interview through. And, you know, a student on podcasts are sitting there, they're not looking for a show about teachers. A parent isn't even looking for shows about teachers. Or teachers aren't looking for shows for students. They're a little more forgiving. So it just really, there's three very distinct groups with different needs, and you kind of need to define what interests you the most. So it's not about like what will get you the growth the fastest, but it's really about what subject, what problem are you going to solve, what audience are you going to serve that interests you the most.
See, that's the problem.
Right. You don't know.
I'm emotionally wrestling with that.
Uh-huh.
Because when Gary said that, it hurt me. But he was right.
Mm-hmm, he is.
Like I was raised by a teacher. You know, my dad's a teacher. My mom's a stay-at-home mom. That makes her a teacher. My sister's a teacher. And when he tells me like teachers don't care to change, I'm like, oh, come on, man, they do.
Mm-hmm.
But I know a lot that don't want to mm-hmm. change. And he says, but all parents want the maybe not all, but most parents want what's best for their kids.
Right.
And there's this wake-up call in education, like, hey, surprise. The ROI of college it's not paying off.
It's not there.
And what we're doing with high schools and middle schools, some of the things aren't relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And so that message rings a lot more true. Like, I'm just saying that, I've just offended some teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but no parent is putting up a fight, what I just said.
So you could change the name of your show to Changing Education. Mm-hmm. Get some really cool artwork, and then say, this podcast is about changing education, and if you're on board with this movement, this podcast is for you, whether you're a teacher, student, or parent. And you make that your mission. You know, my mission went from all of the irreverence modern politics deserves to we make you sound smarter when talking to your friends. Which would you prefer? A few laughs along the way, or I want to sound smart?
Yeah.
That's a huge, that's a big shift, but, you know, it's, if your mission really is changing education, then you say, I'm here to change education, and if you want to be on board with me.
Well, but I think, you know, thinking it through, like, I guess in reality, my job isn't change education.
Mm-hmm.
It's to empower people for the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's to empower people to be more innovative, creative, and entrepreneurial.
Too vague.
Yeah, I know. And that's been right. Kind of the hard part. In this
Remember,
sense
that, audiences are selfish, so you can't be vague like that.
Okay, so thinking out loud, like, prepare your kids now. Or, you know, freelance to freedom. Or, you know, stop sitting on your ass and complaining about things. Do something now. I mean,
Help prepare your kids for a changing job market that you don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, that's something that is probably not being a parent myself. And I'm sitting here thinking a lot of older Gen X baby boomer parents don't understand the gig economy.
Yeah.
And they want to help prepare their kids, mm-hmm. be it in middle school and high mm-hmm. school. So they have a ton of questions about how to better prepare their kids to be entrepreneurial in a different marketplace. So how can you help them understand that?
Well, and ironically enough, now I am circling back to what the whole Start Ed Up is.
Mm-hmm.
It's treating education like a startup. And education doesn't mean you have to be an educator. Education means that you, like, one of our things that really struck me is one time I said, you know, all kids are homeschooled.
Mm-hmm.
Just mine get home at 3 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
But they're homeschooled.
Right.
We sit around the dinner table. I have an active investment in my three children. And I think with that is that if I can get across that message that all kids are homeschooled and we're interviewing people that are preparing, because that's the one thing, like, some people I have on have been shockingly correct about where things are going.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, here's an inside track to some people that are telling you what to avoid, what not to avoid. You might want to jump on, or, you know, FOMO.
Right. Yeah. So let's take Gary Vee's statement and look at, like, the popularity of your class. You have in your classroom, in your innovation class, a proven model that is working for people. And parents want their kids to take that. So you can use social proof and say, as the teacher of one of the first innovation classes in America, I've started a classroom that teaches children, that best prepares kids for the gig economy.
Yeah.
And if you want to get insights into my experience, tune into this podcast so you can help better prepare your child for the future. And so that right there,
I like that.
That right there says, here's my experience. I'm taking the experiences I learned over the 10 years of developing this class, and I'm connecting them to experts in the gig economy to better prepare your child. That, to me,
yeah.
is a winning description.
I like that. So I'm marking that.
Yeah, 52 minutes.
There we go.
So
that, I love that.
Because, and you ought to think about not only your name, but also your artwork to be as modern as possible, because you're having forward-thinking parents listening to this. Any parent who is not only going to enroll their kid into an innovation class, but is also going to listen to a podcast about how to get their kids in, is going to be very tuned in to the marketplace of innovation, of, you know, like Reid Hoffman's artwork for his podcast. Like, that's a great business podcast because it's doing something different. It's taking the NPR model that works. It's got great, outstanding artwork. It has a name attached to it. And you go, okay, there's a lot of social proof here. It looks like it's on top of the, you know. And so Start Ed Up. There may be problems with the name. You may want to put innovation and education in the title somehow, because the title, for instance, if you go search, it's We Are Libertarians with Chris Spangle - News and Politics from a Libertarian Perspective. So I'm telling you, when you're in iTunes, which is how most people find every podcast on Apple iTunes, that this is a libertarian podcast that examines news and current events. Okay, so that's really important to have. And then the artwork, I think my artwork is, it used to be a 10 and now it's a 6. And so I need to refresh that at some point very soon. But it's expensive to go on 99 Designs or have a graphic artist or an ad agency do that stuff. But it could be a project that you have for a student that you pay them $200 to do some artwork for you. You know, somebody who has a design eye. But I think it's really important that you, once you kind of get an idea of your new brand, to have that refreshing look and be current and be cutting edge.
Yeah, I'm just going to be transparent and say there's a part of me that, like, I loved everything you just said. And then yet there's a fear of me that, now, mind you, I am 11 months old.
Mm-hmm.
This podcast is 11 months old. And, like, again, I agree with everything you said. And then I thought, man, but if I change the name of my podcast, everything I worked for, I also think that I'm going to be doing this podcast for the next 5 to 10 years.
Right.
Walk me through that.
I don't know, because I'm going through it too, because I'm 7 times your size.
Yeah.
And 5 times longer in terms of, I've got 6 years of brand equity in We Are Libertarians and the artwork. I've had 3 designs for the logo. And in some ways, I think the name hurts me for what I'm trying to do, because every time I post on the big Facebook page to 87,000 people, it's, well, this isn't what a libertarian thinks. You're misrepresenting the philosophy, because every single post that I'm posting is being judged against that person's view of what libertarians
biased.
Right. Yeah. Their bias is evaluating the content and if you're representing their tribe right. So if I went with WAL politics, wall politics, I wouldn't have that problem. And if I had a less authoritarian look and more of a current and modern hip look, I think I'd probably have a lot more growth, but...
Or alienate your original base.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but I think there, with any, I have a good sense of what works because I've got a lot of experience in this. That's what I do for a living for the day job and have for a long time. And I just think that sometimes you have to make these big changes. And you'll be rewarded. You have to go with your gut, because if, when I had a co-host leave, who was very integral to not only the philosophy, but also the tone of the show, it was an opportunity to keep doing what I was doing poorly, that I was losing interest in doing, or innovate and start doing something that I feel is more true to myself. And hope there was a lot of there were a lot of sleepless nights after that in September, because I didn't know if the audience was going to stick with me. This is my future career.
Yeah.
And I can rise to the occasion and take some chances and hope that they'll stick with me, or I will go down with the ship. But what I've seen is, if you put work and effort into something, You're constantly shedding and regenerating audience.
Absolutely.
I've seen this at the day job on a mass scale. You are constantly regenerating your audience, and it's a constant people listen for 20 minutes to anything. It's the world that we live in. And so if your content is good and you lose, let's say I changed the branding and I lost 1,000 of those 7,000 people, then I will regenerate that in a month. But I just don't think, for instance, that a lot of people have a lot of allegiance to the logo, to the brand name. Like, it helps generate new audience because people are interested in libertarianism, but I could do that with a different brand name.
Yeah.
The core audience, the community, is there because of me and their friends in that community. And so I just don't think that you lose a lot by changing a brand for a podcast.
And this is a stupid question, I'm sure, and I think I know the answer, but just because I like the RSS feed is the same, so therefore all of a sudden the name changes, it's not like I have to start from zero.
Correct.
All the original subscribers are subscribed.
Exactly.
They just look at it and like, oh, what's that? Different artwork, different name. Okay, Don's still hosting it. We're good.
Yeah, you prepare your audience over time, which is something that I've been doing. I've been getting in our community group saying, what would you guys think about this or that?
And that's cool.
Getting them weighing in on it. I've been talking about it on here. I've been talking about it on the show. Like, I'm thinking about doing this. preparing them for that change. And I don't, because I don't know if I'm going to or not.
Yeah.
Because I'm of the same mindset. Like, I've got brand equity. Why would I want to change it?
Because then you almost have a crowdsource where people like write in and go, no, idiot.
Right.
Then you're like, You'd be stupid. Or somebody really, like, I struggled with what you just said a while ago because it all sounded like a really good idea. But I need that. Yeah. You know, I need that. And I'm not asking, well, actually, the people that do, so I have had a little bit more of a call to action recently, ironically enough, from a friend. They're like, dude, tell them at the end to do this and that. And so I've also been saying I'm taking suggestions for future guests. And some of the suggestions are nice. Mm-hmm. But some of the suggestions are, I'm just going to be mean and saying, like, this isn't every time, but like, I work for a multi-level marketing and blah, blah, blah. I'd love to be on your show. I'm like,
and that's just the nature of mass audiences. I can tell you, I spend my day looking at things I don't care about from people who don't get what we do at various levels. Like we did an episode last night about Bitcoin, and you can verify there's, you know, 50 questions on here and three of them were worth answering, you know, and it's just because, you know, like when I say, hey, I want to know what are your questions about Bitcoin? Can I get that at Chuck E. Cheese? Why didn't I buy any? You know, only a dummy would invest in this. Well, there's an inherent question in that you can refute. But, you know, so you take it with a grain of salt. And I just, people, as long as they feel heard, they don't feel insulted if you don't do what they say.
Yeah.
And if somebody does feel hurt by that, then they're the ones with the emotional problem, not you.
Yeah, that's true.
My podcast host didn't listen to me. But you want to make them feel heard, but it doesn't mean you have to do what they say.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. Well, give me a ton to think about.
Yeah.
Struggle with.
So what kind of equipment questions do you have?
Well, now I'm just, this is not realistic for me, what you have here. Listen to me give a visual representation of a podcast. No, I'm looking to the right, and I see a beautiful soundboard. I see your H6, although a guest once told me, if you can afford to go travel and do those podcasts, and unfortunately I don't live in Los Angeles nor New York City, but there's a couple of guests that I have coming up that I think that if they're okay with it, I'll travel to them. But I'm going to probably take a little bit more. I just got the H6. I'm going to take it a little bit more seriously and see if I can do. But on the doing it via the website, I'm starting to look at Zencastr because it splits it into two tracks instead of just one. Because what I have like now is Zoom. Zoom's been all right. Like for some reason, what was it? It was the Skype recorder. The worst audio spikes I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, I don't recommend Skype generally. I think that it's a pretty shitty way to
When I was first starting, it was just like the best success I had was with Google Hangouts.
Yeah.
Just the audio version of Google Hangouts. And then Zoom came, it's come along, but I discovered Zoom. And then I did a show with a lady, Jennifer Gonzalez, The Cult of Pedagogy. She was like, hey, your show the first day had 15,000 hits. She's just huge.
Right.
I'm like, what? But she's also been very, very deliberate on her branding. She is just for teachers.
Right.
Anyway, to your point. But, she used Zencastr. That was the first time I used it. But she's like, hold on a second. Your part of the audio hasn't uploaded yet. I'm like, what? She's like, yeah, it splits it in two tracks. It's wonderful. So I've been looking into those things, just trying to get a little bit more control via the, you know, if I have to do that. And to be honest with you, I'm like, I can't afford to fly out to here and there. So the majority of my episodes will be, for better or for worse, online.
Yeah. So I have a Zencastr's good. I use Ringer. It's a Ringer without an E at the end. And it does the same thing. It records it in a lossless format, which is high quality. They have to keep their browser open. You're asking them to do a little bit of extra work, which some people will or won't do, your guest host usually will. So, like, I love having Brian Nichols on. He lives in Philly, and we use Ringer, and it sounds great. It sounds like he's in the room, but if he were on Skype, we'd have a lot of problems with that audio. And it records, I not only record the full mix on the Zoom H6, but I have our separate tracks too. I think that using something specifically built for podcasting like a Ringer or a Zencastr is much better. It's much better sounding. Skype is trying to deliver to the masses, and Ringer is not. And yeah, I think all of this is some of it is social proof. So could I have $15 headphones? Absolutely. But the AKGs are $50. They look nicer. They look more professional. So when somebody tunes into the video, they see a real-looking broadcast. Somebody with a SM7B, they see, oh, well, Joe Rogan has one of those. They have one of those. Mm-hmm. They must be serious. Not only that, but it makes my little chipmunk voice sound better. The processing, the sound of the show, if you go back and listen to 2013, it sounds significantly worse, but still good enough.
Oh, yeah.
And like the Zoom H6 now does everything. Like the Zoom H6 is a great piece of equipment that you can have up to six people.
Just on itself. Just like, on without, its own. Without this board, right?
On here. The own, yeah.
So I can take, like, I take this on the road with me. I have, you know, three or four good, decent, I mean, I don't have the Shure.
Right.
Right. So I have some, like, what is it, AT70s or something like that? Yeah. Like, decent
Audio mics. Technicas make great mics.
Right. So I plug those in the XLR and I tweak a little bit on the settings and I'm good, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So no, the Zoom does everything you need it to do. And so when we go do, you know, in the Chris Bangle show, some of the ones with Emily Sweet were recorded at her house on the Zoom, some of the Miranda's World. It is a great piece of equipment. I have a rolling cooler that I have six mic cords that I spent $12 on each on Amazon for the Sendit cords. And then I have the SM48s that we used to use, the Shure SM48s, as I've upgraded to 58s, which just have a little bit of a better sound. But the 48s sound good enough. And I just keep all that stuff. I keep the four mics and the four cords in the bag ready to roll.
Yes.
And then when I'm ready, I just put the Zoom in there and then I put it in my trunk and I head off. And it sounds great because you've got the same kind of setup as we do here. And as I travel next year to, you know, Porkfest, for instance, all I really need is this. The top here, you see the mics. It sounds great.
Yeah.
This can be a USB interface. You can plug this into your computer and it can serve as a USB interface.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. Like my Yeti, my blue Yeti.
Throw that away, please.
Seriously? Oh, I mean, dude, things. Okay, so that was my next question. So, so far, because I get people say, like, dude, you sound great. Now, mind you, they're used to people talking straight into their Mac without any mic. So, if I had $1,000 burning a hole in my pocket and my wife said it was okay, and I shouldn't say that. My wife is the most spectacular person ever. So, I've already got the H6. Like, I had $1,000. What would you spend on Go?
First, Zoom H6.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's off the board. I have $1,000 up and above that. I already have the H6. Okay. And all of a sudden I get a $1,000 gift card, right? From anywhere.
All right.
You buy this mic right here, the Shure?
No. I think I would buy probably four SM58s, Shure SM58 mics. I would get OK cords. Yeah, this is a beta, but because this particular SM58 beta.
So the one I'm on you're talking about.
Yeah, has a better sound for female voices, which is why I originally used it for mine, because I have a higher pitched voice. And when I have women, I have them use that mic because it's got a little bit more of a pickup.
I love the fact that you know that.
Right, yeah. and then the SM58s have the on-off switch, so that sounds really good. I would get a USB interface. I would get a Focusrite Scarlett, which is, you know, sitting down there, which is something that if I have to do an interview on the road, then I do that. The other mic that you could get, if you didn't want to get the SM58s, you could get one of those 58s. I would get an Ars Technica ATR USB mic. It's about $60-$70, and it's great. It sounds great when you plug it in. And if you're going to do a solo podcast, you're just starting out, you want to do a podcast for under $100, get one of these mics because it's a great sounding USB mic. Mm. I would spend the money and get a processor because if you're doing, you know, right now, if we just sit here and don't talk, you don't hear my air running. You don't hear the interstate that's across the street. I have four DBX boxes, DBX 286s, that DBX 286S, they the four of them help filter out all that news. They boost. They have a lot of gain. This mic needs a lot of gain. And so it makes all this 58 sound good, too.
Okay, but how much more are we talking now?
Now we've spent your budget.
Okay.
So you can go with a Behringer MDX 4600, and it allows you four inputs. It's $200, and you can run things, you know, you're going to need four extra cords to run in and then out into the Zoom. The reason I have the Mackie Pro SFX16 is that...
Intimidate your guests?
Not just that, but it's a stationary thing that I can run inputs into the MDX. I can have a bunch of inputs, and the outputs are especially important. When you're running 2, 3, 4 cameras and you want to input them, then, yeah, that's necessary. Mm-hmm. And so, really, if you're giving me a $1,000 budget, I'm saying... Get the four mics, possibly the 6 extension, maybe the Zoom boom extension for videos, and then I would take that extra $500 that you have and buy a Mevo.
Okay.
Because the Mevo camera is now $400. There's a plus version that's 5 or 6. But the Mevo camera I found to be, it was glitchy when I had poor internet. But now that I have the hotspot running the Mevo camera, it looks really good. It can record great video, and it fits in your pocket, basically. It's just a great little piece of equipment that you can live stream to Facebook, and it's very versatile. It's very easy to use. I really like it a lot. I would also say get a hard case. I've got one of these hard cases for the Zoom.
Pelican.
Like a Gator case or whatever. I think I spent $80 on that.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, that boom, if you're doing videos, you can do great videos with your phone.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing I guess I didn't talk about is that actually this is the fun part.
Yeah.
I've got, the first episode was last night, but one of the guys that's with us on the Started Up team he's a black guy. And we have usually different perspectives because he teaches inner city and I don't. And so it's crucial conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great because when I have a different opinion, he doesn't call me a racist bigot. And when he has a different opinion, I don't say he's stupid. He's just a wonderful human being. And so, yeah, it was like last night's first episode, and we ran it off the, you know, camera when I flip up my laptop. So we're going to take that more seriously.
Yeah, you're going to need to do any video that you're going to live stream with. You're going to need the iRig, which is the iRig 2, which is what I use, is a great little piece of equipment. I plug it into the iPad, and then the Zoom... Or the Mevo picks up the audio from the iRig, which is basically a converter. You only need the $37 iRig. You need one of those. What else do I think is essential? I always recommend a backup. So I have a Zoom H2, which is something that this is what I originally used. I bought an Alesis Multimix 8, which I still recommend. I think it was a great $120 little board. And then I plugged everything into it, and I ran into the Zoom H2 and recorded that way for the first 5 years of this podcast. And I think the Zoom H2...
This is a backup.
This is a backup.
Oh, my gosh. Everything went to heck in handbasket, but
it's all here.
We still have there.
Yeah. Okay,
that's a really good idea.
And I run from the $35 Behringer headphone amp into the H2 just to have a backup recording because... I've forgotten to hit record. I've lost so many things. And I think if you're talking to a Tim Ferriss, you got one shot.
Yeah.
You know, and even if it's, you know, your friend sitting around here, you don't want to go back and like say, hey, sorry, can we do that again?
Yeah.
After 30 minutes. And we've done that in the past. And I've not had a problem. I've not had a failure with this system. So I think an H2 is a really good backup. Yeah, it's also great to take to like to put on a podium. If you're recording like Radley Balcode talking about police brutality. So the other thing is maybe an $80, $100 ring light from Amazon. Mm-hmm. I've got the $400 dimmable LED lights because you don't need a lot of light with the Mevo camera. So plus they're low profile, but those are $400 or $500.
Yeah.
So that was, and this is my house, so I want them to be low profile, but you really only need one light, but lighting plus your phone plus a tripod for $25, Then you get a full video rig. I mean, you really, it's you're looking at between 50, to have a professional studio like I have, you're talking $2,000 to $3,000.
I was gonna at least I guess 4 to 5.
I mean, over the course of the 6 years, yeah. I've easily spent
sound dampening stuff
between $20,000 and $30,000 on this.
Honey, if you're listening, no.
And so I've just now started to make money. It will be years before I get that investment back. But because right now I take the Patreon money, we get around $1,000 a month. I take that and I put it into news sources. I put it into a little other pieces of equipment, because once you get into it, like, this stand is $35. There's five of these. Then you've got the tablecloth. The tablecloth alone was $30, and then there's each cord is $7, and so it just all really starts to add up. And so that's why I say now is, like, get the Zoom, it does everything. Get some $11 Sendit cords, get some SM58s at $40 a piece, and you've got a podcast.
Yeah.
And you can literally do everything, and you can do it for less than $500. But if you're trying to start a podcast cheap, don't, because you're never going to do a podcast cheap right.
Right.
And sound is so incredibly important.
Unless you have a really, really sympathetic audience. I mean, I'll push back a little bit on that. I think that if your content is always great, I mean, obviously you'll scale up by your quality.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some people that I've, like, they're so engaging that you've been pushed over time to get better. And that's the reason why your Patreon's grown. So I would encourage people. I slightly disagree that even if you have bad equipment, out there is better than never. And if you truly have good content, people will ask you to do more.
Well, I started with a $1,500 investment total. Mm-hmm. I took out a second loan on my car.
And if you aren't willing to spend it, then you're not really taking it seriously.
But it was also that $1,500 now you can buy for $500. In the equipment setup, I just, you know, so it was 2010, so it was, things were different back then, and you know, if you go and listen to the early episodes of We Are Libertarians, it sounds fine, but something weird happened along the way where people just started to want to give me money and wanted to give me equipment, and I've had this conversation a lot with coworkers who are struggling with the choice of asking their audience for Patreon subscriptions or merch or whatever. And I'm just like, if you think you do a good show and put out a good product and people get something of value, then it's not asking for money. It's saying, you get something of value. Would you mind pitching in to help pay for it?
Right.
And that's really how I've positioned Wall. It's like, it costs me $400 to $600 a month to run this thing at this point, because we've grown so much. And so if you like it, then I need you to help pitch in, or else it's going away.
Yeah.
And so if you don't want us to go away, help pitch in. And for pitching in, I'm going to give you some bonus content.
Sure.
Which, an extra hour of content a week makes me more tired, but it doesn't really cost me anything.
Right.
So it's, and people enjoy that bonus content. They get more of what they really like. And so the 7,000 people may not want to hear an extra hour, but there's 100 that do.
Yeah.
Or a 200 that do. And in 2013, Joe Ruiz and I were sitting there talking about the growth of this, and he goes, you know, can we start taking donations and selling merch? I'm like, we don't have the audience. We have 300 people listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to come a time, though, that I think people will just want to give us money, though. And he said, you're an idiot. They will never, nobody just wants to give someone money.
Yeah.
It's like, but that happened. That happened in 2015, where people started saying, like, hey, I heard you talking about that piece of equipment. Is there a way to donate that to you?
Yeah.
And so,
that's cool.
People will pay for stuff that they love, and it's truly humbling to create something that people want to donate their paycheck to invest in.
That's
so
awesome.
So it's really cool to grow something that people love like that. And I would highly recommend setting up a Patreon, because it brings you closer to your audience. They feel more invested in it, and it helps you offset the cost of doing it, and that makes you work harder at it.
Yeah, something I'm definitely going to consider. Well, man, I'm going to listen to this 3 times, because I have a lot, like, I feel so naked. I didn't write anything down. So luckily it's recorded.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate you having me come out and have this out loud conversation. And hopefully if people are either doing a podcast or starting a podcast, I'm hoping this is valuable. as well to them, because it was a lot of really cool info. So, and you have to come over to Casa de Wetrick.
I would love to.
I'll show you the raw bones of what hopefully will be growing up on the equipment and layout and all that other good stuff. So I sincerely appreciate it, man.
Sure. And thanks for coming on. One final plug for your stuff.
Yeah. So best way to see a lot of things I do, I'm most active on Twitter at Don Wetrick. The Facebook page, facebook.com/startedup. The podcast of the same name, which who knows, that may be rebranded, but for right now, iTunes, Stitcher, all that good stuff. Start it up, and give us a listen. I would, man, if I started though, just go to straight to episode 2. Don't do episode 1. It's me and my student trying to figure things out. But episode 2 is with Jeff Hoffman, and I think that one just made my stopped me in my tracks. How good that one was. So give that a listen, and man, I'm honored if you do listen, and I'm honored to be with an OG podcaster taking an. And learning and getting advice from some of the best. So appreciate it, Chris.
All right. Thanks, Don.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.